This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It is Thursday today. And I'm actually going to turn on the air conditioner. Not because I weenied out. I didn't weenie out. But I have a friend who is not as accustomed to the heat as someone who grew up in the Philippines. And with summer growing warmer, he said to me, it might just need Freon. And so then I thought, you know, for $35, I could go put some Freon in it so the poor guy wouldn't have to sit in a hot car as we went to dinner. So I, in fact, did go to AutoZone. You know, the guy came out and took a look at it, did some things, told me, yeah, we'd give it a try. So, you know, I bought some Freon for him, from him, and went home. And my wife had actually done this to her van before, so she actually had knowledge. And, you know, did the little Freon thing, and lo and behold, I have air conditioning. So, you know, for however many years I've been driving along sweating in the summers, it was a $35 fix. Now, that's not to say it won't leak out again, but maybe that's another $35. So there is actually, for now, cool air streaming out of my vents. Although the next problem now is that my little flapper louver thingies inside have gotten messed up. So even when I put it on the right setting, it comes out of the windshield. But I am getting a little out of the vents. So, you know, life is good. Life is good. Anyways, so I think I already mentioned it is episode 278. Maybe I haven't. If I hadn't, I had now. It is episode 278. Soon we will be at 280. Not too far from that, we'll be at 290, then 300, then, let's see, 52 times 6 is 312. Then when we get to 312, it will be 6 years worth of podcasts. Unbelievable. Anyways, all is well. I'm putting the finishing touches on a design document for the next project. That seems to be going fine. I'm supposed to be done with that design document at the end of this month, which is next week. But I have all the pieces now for it. I finished up all the pieces today. So it's being vetted now by my immediate superiors. And once they get that done, then I'm going to meet with the programmers next week and go over it with them. I've given them a preliminary look a couple of times along the way. So I'm going to give them a look and let them weigh in and see if there's anything there that causes them concern as far as the timings go. And then if that's all good, then I'll probably go ahead and turn it in at the end of this month. I don't expect there to be any action on it immediately because the major client that I work for is celebrating their centennial, 100 years of operation, the first week of August. Pretty much everybody is going to be tied up doing that. So, but that's okay. You know, there are things I can work on and kind of get us ahead a little bit while we're waiting to get a decision made on the other. So, you know, we should be fine. The writing is going well. I've heard back from several readers at this point. I've actually heard back from a couple of female readers, which I was interested to hear back how they would react. And heard back from a total of, I think, 7 or 8 readers. And about half of them have been women, and I think I may have mentioned last week that my wife was, my wife. My daughter was guardedly enthusiastic about the book. She told me later, no, I enjoyed it. But, you know, she's my daughter, so she doesn't want to really lambast it. But anyways, there were just some things she was looking for that maybe didn't quite have in it. But, you know, that's okay, too. But I've heard back now from three other women, I think. Three other women at this point. Two other. Can't remember. I have to go look. They were both very enthusiastic about the book. So, I mean, raving enthusiastic about it. So that's good. That's good. They said they really enjoyed it. Can't wait till the next one. Yada, 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 yada. So that's good. As far as writing the next one, that's all seems to be puttering along. I've been kind of, I'm in chapter 5 now, and so I'm about, I'm closing in on 100 pages. No, must not quite be that. No, yeah, maybe. Chapter 5, because there's an introductory chapter, so I think I'm some in the 80s or 90s pages worth. And I'm closing in now where things are going to start getting fun. You know, I've been doing all the setups and doing all the little pops and wiggles to get us to this point. And, you know, now we get to be in the good stuff. And so I'm not really sure how much this initial section is actually going to run. In the first book, the original opening section was somewhere around five chapters. And I think I may stretch beyond that because I still have several things I got to get accomplished on this. And, you know, I got to do the big heroic thing in this. So I just think I figured out today what that's going to be. It'll be fine. It'll be good. Not quite sure how all the pieces will lay in yet, but you know, this is just part of the fun of writing. You know, you kind of have an idea and then you just keep moving in and keep seeing how things feel. And you just keep rotating around until finally some pieces open up. So I'm at that stage now. Those pieces are actually starting to open up. So then it's just the question of how long am I going to pull this? You know, do I pull it for a chapter and just make it more and more dangerous, more and more complicated? You know, or do I go for the big win quickly and move on to the next piece? There is a subsequent plot line and then potentially a subsequent plot line after that. That they cascade and react against each other. And I think that's the end of the book then. So I think I have this particular battle at the front of it. And then there's a little bit of relief that leads into another crisis, which then leads into another battle. And then I close this book. And there is, a dramatic setup for long-range arc in this book as well that, frankly, I didn't know was going to be in there that went, oh, well, there you go. And it tied in really well to the parable that I'm working with on this. So, you know, things are laying in. I think this one's going to be fun. And, you know, that'll be 2 down and 22 to go. So just, you know, one book at a time. But at this point, I'm not anticipating any difficulties with getting this to beta readers sometime in January of 2015. So I think we're good. Aside from that, everything else is puttering along. Not really much there. This week, I've been going down my list of topics that I've collected along the way. I had collected a topic on the creative mind. Big, huge article on the creative mind and new discoveries about the creative mind. So last night, you know, I pulled it up. I hadn't actually read it all, but I'm always up for talking about creativity and blah, blah, blah. I'm reading through this article, and they're doing about all the different things that people have thought of that maybe are connected to creativity and the different approaches. And I'm like, yeah. Get to the new stuff. And they're doing all the standard comments from creative people about how stuff just pops into their brains, and if they don't grab it quick enough, they can lose it, and blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah. I've done that. Done that. Get to the good stuff. As it turns out, there wasn't that much good stuff to get to. They're still like, well, we still have a lot of work to do. Oh! Why did you spend this whole article setting me up for this? There was one little interesting tidbit that creativity may have something to do with the area of the brain where we do free associations. Well, I could have told you that. But anyways, they're measuring creative people. They're bringing in and saying, okay, obviously this guy's creative because of X. They've invented a bunch of stuff. They've written a bunch of books. You know, they've created whatever. So obviously they're creative, so let's bring them in and let's stick them inside an MRI machine and have them do word associations and see how much lights up in the area of the brain that we know it does word associations or does other kinds of associations. And in fact, you know, it does light up against a control group. It lights up more. So they're saying, well, maybe creativity has to do with being able to make associations. Well,
yeah.
And I think even earlier in the article, they had mentioned that creativity seemed to be tied, in their definition, to the ability to connect things together that normally you don't connect together. So it would kind of make sense that the area of the brain that's sort of responsible for that free association stuff may have be engaged when you're being creative. Never mind, they're still working on it. We'll see what they find out. Anyway, so I read through the entire article, and as I was getting to the end, I started saying out loud, this is going to be a bust. This is, there is going to be nothing here. And sure enough, so I put that article aside and went down to the next one on the list, which was, and I love this, people prefer electric shocks to being alone with their thoughts. And they don't necessarily come to any grand conclusions with this, but when I read the title of the article, it made me laugh. This is by a man named Matthew Hudson, and he's reporting on some studies that were done. He was saying, that in this day and age, it's obviously that having a few moments to yourself is, you know, it's pretty rare. But he said, honestly, you know, with there's so many challenges in life, it seems like entertaining yourself with your own thoughts for a few minutes seems like one of the easier hurdles to overcome. Well, as it turns out, as they started doing testing on people, in fact, it was not. That people, in general, I would guess in first world nations, find it incredibly hard to be alone with their thoughts. And in fact, in this research, new research showed that they will in fact shock themselves. Deliver electric shocks to themselves to keep themselves entertained. They were quoting the lead researcher, and Timothy Wilson was his name, from University of Virginia. And he said, we, like everyone else, noticed how wedded people seem to be to modern technology and seem to shy away from just using their own thoughts to occupy themselves. That got us to wondering whether this said something fundamental about people's ability to do this. Okay, so they started trying stuff. You know, this, that, and the other. And one of the things that they assumed is they thought, well, we've got this huge brain, and it's just stocked full of pleasant memories and has the ability to generate fantasies And it really can't be that hard to spend a few minutes enjoying yourself with your thoughts. And so they said, we did study after study, and for many people, yeah, it's not, they don't really like to be alone with their thoughts, which there's a reason for that. We'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, so the study, what they did is they asked people to put away distractions and to entertain themselves with their own thoughts for 6 to 15 minutes. So this wasn't hours. This was 6 to 15 minutes. And then they had people fill out little surveys. Well, 58% of the participants rated the difficulty at or above the midpoint on the scale. And the midpoint was obviously somewhat difficult. And 42% rated their enjoyment below the midpoint. Okay, so maybe above was somewhat enjoyable. That was the 58%. And the 42% was that it wasn't enjoyable. In the seventh study, participants completed the task at home, and 32% admitted to cheating by using their phones, listening to music, or doing something but just sitting there. They said, in the lab studies, one participant's data was tossed because an experimenter accidentally left a pen behind and the subject used it to write out a to-do list. Gotta do something. Another was tossed because an instruction sheet was left behind and the subject used it to practice origami. So in the most interesting study, to me, subjects were wired up and given a chance to shock themselves during the thinking period if they wanted to. They'd all had a chance to try out the device ahead of time to see how painful it was. And yet, even those who said they wouldn't pay money not to feel the shock again, even those who said, I'll give you money if I don't have to feel that then, a quarter of them and two-thirds of the men gave themselves a zap when left with their own thoughts. They said one outlier pressed the button 190 times in 15 minutes. Commenting on the sudden appeal of electricity coursing through one's body, Wilson said, I'm still puzzled by that. So, of course, the question comes down to, why is it so hard to entertain ourselves? You know, did the subjects just couldn't decide where to steer their thoughts? And they said, well, no, in several studies, people were offered topics to fantasize about, but that tweak had no effect on enjoyment or difficulty. Now, the head of the study favors what he calls a scanner hypothesis, that we have evolved always to be constantly scanning, focusing on danger. And so, since because of that, then when things get quiet, we get real jittery and nervous. And in discussing that hypothesis, Wilson, the man who wrote the study, said that they don't really have strong evidence, but he's convinced that that's what's going on. Because anecdotally, reverie's not so hard when you're exercising or knitting or staring out a window. So he thinks because these people are in an unfamiliar environment that may be dangerous, that's the reason people found it so hard to be alone with their thoughts. Maybe. They said they did find a small correlation between meditation experience and the ability to entertain oneself. And they suggested that control over one's thoughts may be the appeal of meditation. So Wilson said, I suspect that with a little practice, just thinking pleasant thoughts in one form or another should work too. Well, that's very interesting. We'll come back to that in a minute. Before he laughed, as I say that, it sounds like sort of audacious to say, well, the Buddhists have had 2,000 years of meditation training, but I can train people to do it easier. We certainly haven't succeeded in doing it yet, but this is something I want to test. So, You got people, they're sitting in the room, they're told to be quiet and entertain themselves with their own thoughts. But they find this incredibly difficult, to the point that they shock themselves. Something they know is going to hurt, but they shock themselves anyways. One of the things that seems to help is meditation. One of the things that seems to help is thinking pleasant thoughts. I'm getting my mail. So here's my little hypothesis, because as I'm fond of saying, when all you have is a hammer, all the world's a nail. So mapping this through then to the flesh and the spirit, what do we come up with? Well, if, in fact, the reason people are uncomfortable with their thoughts is because of the flesh within them, the flesh that they have not learned how to control, not learned how to ignore. If that's the reason they're uncomfortable with their thoughts, then as they get quiet, that sound of the flesh is going to just keep getting louder and louder. I actually knew a fine, fine Christian man that I was talking to at one point, and he looked at me and he said, so, I'm backing into my garage. He said, so when you're driving around, do you have music on in the car? And I said, oh, sometimes. I said, but, you know, a lot of times I just have it off and I'm just thinking as I'm going in. And he kind of paused and he said, yeah, well, that's because you like yourself. And I said, well, why don't you like yourself? Oh, you know, I've just done a lot of stuff. You know, there's been stuff in the past and, you know, I just... And he was obviously filled with regret about some things. And I talked to him, you know, at that point about flesh and spirit. And I'm convinced what's going on here is that if you haven't learned how to get the light of the truth down on all those cockroaches that are the flesh that are always trying to accuse and come after you, that as soon as you get quiet, things get very uncomfortable. And so it makes perfect sense to me that people would be shocking themselves to keep from having to be quiet. And it also makes perfect sense that people who have experience in meditation, which is a process of quieting the flesh, would do better. And it also makes perfect sense that if you'd teach people how to focus and concentrate on pleasant thoughts, that that would quiet down those voices as well. It all makes perfect sense. Because we have this thing within us that, if allowed, will feed us all sorts of fear and condemnation and anger and hate and greed and jealousy and envy, because that's the flesh. And I'm pretty convinced it's not that the flesh really, really has all of those things. It just knows that it can get us and can react to those things. And it knows those things will destroy us. So it's just constantly peddling them, trying to get us stirred up, trying to get us afraid, trying to tell us that our life is going to be over, trying to tell us that if someone else succeeded, we're going to be in the poorhouse. It's just constantly agitating, trying to keep us agitated so that we will never get quiet with ourselves. And if we never get quiet with ourselves, there's a good chance we're never going to get quiet enough to hear that wonderful little voice that is within us that's telling us that we're loved and everything's okay and there is nothing to fear. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.